All right. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the August 3rd meeting of the Engineering Operations Committee. I have an announcement that I have to make before we start the meeting. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Summit Circle Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will be conducted without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raised hand feature in Zoom. You'll be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial 9*9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it's your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. For the public that's present, there are public comment cards on the table outside if you wish to address an item. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will announce each agenda item. Staff will present. I'll ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members, and then the committee will come to a consensus on whether to move this item on for consideration. The PowerPoint shown on tonight's meeting will be posted on SCB website. With that, if you all stand and please join in the Pledge of Allegiance. Good to let you stay there. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are any members of the public that which would comment during the public comment period?
Being none. Not at this time, later.
Do you have a card?
I do not.
If you would, please put a card in. Okay, item 3 is the quarterly safety presentation, and Rebecca Lustig is going to present for us.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm guessing somebody is going to be pulling up my presentation, probably Leticia.
Hey, Liz will take care of it.
All right. Thank you so much. So good afternoon, board members and E&O committee members. I'm Rebecca Lustig, Environmental Health and Safety Supervisor for Santa Clarita Water Agency, and this is the safety update for the fourth and final quarter of the 2022-2023 fiscal year. So this covers the time period of April 1st through June 30th, 2023. Next slide, please. During this quarter, safety staff engaged in a bunch of activities. On this slide, we have some of our standard activities, meetings, and inspections that include our safety tailgates. Safety staff conducted worksite and facility inspections each month. We had our safety committee meetings with supervisors and other staff, pre-construction meetings, as well as meetings on active and ongoing construction projects and other special projects. Had lots of new hire safety and emergency response and evacuation orientations to introduce our new hires to the safety department and get their safety equipment, PPE and training needs sorted out and to just introduce them to safety resources. We participated in regulatory compliance activities with regards to safety assessments, trainings, and accompanied our inspectors during hazardous materials and hazardous compliance inspections. And I don't have it written here, but another activity that we have been engaging in is agency-wide health and safety communications. So this has included forwarding some information about extreme heat and poor air quality advisories when we receive them from Cal OES or from California Department of Public Health. We did a wildlife awareness email that was accompanied by a snake awareness and safety presentation that I videotaped and posted on our safety page on the SharePoint. And we contribute to a safety corner in the agency's pipeline newsletter. This quarter in May, we did a Global Health and Fitness Awareness Month article that went over things related to employee safety, such as getting a good night's rest, being very conducive to somebody's awareness and therefore safety during the workday, and also safety related to outdoor activities such as mosquito awareness and heat and hydration awareness. Next slide, please. So here are some activities that are broken down by each month during this quarter. In April, we participated or were working with water systems and water quality while the chemical tank over at Castaic Disinfection Facility was removed. So because there were some residues in it and the tank itself would be needed to be cleaned out and the material removed as a hazardous waste, we were coordinating with staff on that and the haz waste hauler. We walked around with the fire protection district new inspector on a few of our sites. And then throughout the month, we also did respirator fit testing, annual fit testing for staff and also for new hires. In May and June, we did some CPR first aid AED training, or more specifically, Joe Diaz did those trainings in person because he's certified to do them. In May, we did trenching and excavation competent person training at Pine Street for various work groups. In May, we also had our underground storage tank. This is for the diesel underground fuel tank that's over at Rio. Our designated operator did our annual training for the safety department. And we also coordinated the inspection of rigging equipment, so straps and chains, and were able to identify items that needed to be taken out of service. In June, had a variety of trainings, did some catch-up for new hires and for people who had missed some trainings on fall protection, confined space, and respirator fit testing. We also had our Kona Crane quarterly inspections. We accompanied our Coupa inspector for GT, Sand Canyon Pump Station, and Rio Vista Intake Pump Station. For those sites, they all have an above-ground fuel tank, and so there were some additional items that we needed to inspect in those areas. We also helped coordinate railway training for staff at GT for the utilities group that are going to be working in or around the railroad right-of-way for projects. We helped coordinate lockout-tagout training at Pine Street for various work groups that work with electrical systems. And we also did some environmental sampling on sludge that was produced and removed from drying beds at Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant and Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant. The concern here being that the heavy metal content that's possibly in that waste product could be deemed a hazardous waste. The preliminary analytical results came in July, and we have some follow-up analytics to do that's in process right now at the lab. And this is just some pictures to accompany that last information I just gave. These are just some aerial views and some photographs of the Rio Vista sludge pile and drying beds, just to give you an idea of what it is that we were sampling. We just took some samples from each of those beds and then also the filter material that had been removed from them to test for the heavy metals. Next slide, please. And same thing over here at Earl Schmidt, but this was a pile that was associated with the ongoing expansion project. So the drying beds themselves are being rehabbed, but we just needed to test that sludge pile to figure out if it constituted a hazardous waste and needed to be disposed of as such. Next slide, please. Here are the fourth quarter safety metrics. And so we've done a number of safety meetings. There are tailgates, committee meetings, pre-construction meetings. We've done all of our safety inspections for the month and safety audits and job hazard analysis. Next slide, please. This slide shows our incident data for the fourth quarter. So we did not have any reportable incidents in this quarter, but we did have two recordable incidents. Both of these occurred in May. One was a staff that had experienced a back injury while trying to remove an item from their work vehicle. So it was a bit of an awkward position. And because this resulted in some missing and restricted duty days, it's therefore recordable. And in response to this, we did some training on safe lifting techniques. The other incident was a staff that had experienced a bite from an unknown something, possibly a spider, insect, while working on a motor. And because the incident required something beyond first aid and some restrictions, since the bite was on their dominant hand, that's also makes it a recordable incident. Both staff are fully back at work and they're both okay. The next slide, please. Our vehicle safety metrics, we had three incidents that involved agency vehicles, none of which resulted in an injury, and one of which I debated over including here, but I did anyway, which I'll explain. So two incidents occurred in April. One involved staff that got stuck in the mud at Earl Schmidt while backing up, and then their vehicle jumped and unfortunately hit one of the contractor's vehicles that was parked on a very narrow access road. The other incident that occurred was staff being stopped at a red light, completely obeying the rules of the road, and unfortunately were rear-ended by a member of the public who, for some reason, did not see their stopped vehicle or see the red light. The third incident occurred in June, and it was an agency vehicle that got backed into while it was at a service shop. So nobody was in it. Staff wasn't around, but I included it just because it result in a vehicle being damaged. But in essence, only two incidents involved actual staff in their vehicles. Next slide, please. This is our emergency preparedness activities for the fourth quarter. As always, we are doing our alert media monthly testing, and safety also utilizes alert media to notify staff of some of these extreme heat events. And right now we are evaluating a new feature in alert media for threat intelligence. So we're going to be meeting with them, the alert media people, to discuss what that is and whether or not we want to include it in the next contract. Safety attended the local emergency planning committee meeting, Region 1 meeting on May 17th. We also attended Santa Clarita's emergency preparedness group. Joe Diaz and I attended an event that was hosted by Cal OES in April. This was a briefing on the process to apply for disaster recovery assistance for the damages that may have occurred due to flooding and mudslides and landslides because of those heavy winter rains. Because of the eligible categories, we didn't end up taking part in that because none of the damages that were caused by the storms were either not eligible or not severe enough to justify the effort. But it was a good experience to see what the process would be, just in case, hopefully never happens, that we do suffer some severe infrastructure damage due to a disaster and would need to go through that process. Safety and operations are also working right now, revising the agency's emergency response plan, or our ERP. We have a current approved one, but we discovered that the Division of Drinking Water provides a very detailed and robust template that, looking over it, we evaluate it, and it's more comprehensive, and it's a lot, the format is a lot easier to follow. So we're currently taking the information on our existing plans and programs and inserting it into that template. Emergency action plan training occurred at Summit in May. This is different than our ERP. These are site-specific training for staff on what to do in a disaster and how to evacuate that particular work site. FEMA COVID-related disaster funding, good note here, June 5th, we received an additional $40,900 to compensate the agency for upfront costs that we incurred, having to repeatedly disinfect our facilities, our offices, in response to positive COVID cases and COVID outbreaks. And this is in addition to some monies that we had received for personal protective equipment and COVID supplies, such as face coverings. Next slide, please. So ongoing projects and upcoming activities, we're continuing to work on our incident management team and emergency preparedness. So we're still working with staff on and IDing people who need to get additional incident command training and developing exercises. And related to this, the safety department, the three of us are taking classes to qualify and certify us to be able to train other people and certify others in emergency preparedness activities. So these train the trainer type courses mean that we can host events and we also have greater flexibility in training staff instead of relying on outside vendors or online courses. Example is in April, I took a Homeland Security exercise evaluation program on how to design a discussion-based or operations-based exercise. And in May, Joe Diaz took a Emergency Operations Center Management and Operations course. We're continuing with the emergency radio communication system installations in vehicles, although our fleet supervisor is going to be more intimately familiar with the progress on that project. We're going to continue to attend meetings. So local emergency preparedness region 1 quarter 3 meeting is on August 9th. We have our ongoing efforts to create a best in class safety culture by continuing with our regular trainings and committee meetings, doing inspections and hazard evaluations at locations and trying to maintain open communication and collaboration with all of our work sections. We're continuing to do the risk management plan revisions. We're continuing to update the safety manual. Our IIPP, Injury and Illness Prevention Plan, has been updated, and I'm currently working on a training video to post for staff. We're also currently updating the spill prevention and countermeasure control plans for the sites that have above ground fuel storage. So that would be our GT Sand Canyon pump station and Rio Vista intake pump station. Some special events or safety training events that we have coming up during this next quarter, the first quarter of 2023-24. In July, we just had some heavy equipment and spotter training. So those are the going over general safety and also hand signals. In August, we have a second half of that training. We had scheduled a forklift train the trainer training, but unfortunately we had to reschedule that for October. But safety staff will be attending an all hazards emergency management concepts course, as well as emergency management instructor course in August. And in September, we'll be training staff on fire extinguisher safety and general fire safety. And this was chosen at strategic because September, October, when we have certification of all of our fire extinguishers and our fire suppression systems. Next slide, please. And that concludes the safety update for this fourth quarter. I would be happy to answer any questions. And if I can't, then I will be happy to get back to you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Liz, are there any questions from outside?
Seeing none.
Very good. Questions from the committee? Director Orzechowski.
On slide 10, the special safety training session for July, August, and September, those are done in person. Is that right?
That is correct.
With actual equipment and real-world exercises, right? So the team is actually using a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, so that's going to be the inspections of the fire extinguisher, and we're going to be working with the fire department and Joe Diaz, our emergency preparedness coordinator, to figure out how we're going to, and we've done this before, to set up where we would intentionally set a very controlled fire and have people do actually extinguish it, activating the fire extinguisher. Yes.
I am 100% pro, continuous trainings. I really appreciate the fact that you and your team go to different conferences and seminars to get, you know, more knowledge. And although it may seem as though, you know, it may seem redundant, but it is necessary. You know, I've seen instances where departments like yourselves are idle, and 3 months into being idle, that's when you have situations. So, you know, I appreciate you and your staff doing this. It's really important. In regards to slide number 9, you mentioned that you did not submit an application for some sort of emergency reimbursement because the you know, we did not qualify in terms of our damage. What about submitting them just to know who the key players are and key administrators are, just to build that relationship? Would that be something that might be helpful to you and your staff?
We had discussed that, and that was an idea that was batted around just to kind of get familiar and go through the process. We did have that discussion both internally and with management. And I think the general consensus was that it is a very time consuming process, and we had a lot of other things that were more immediate. So one of the things that I did do, though, is that we did collect all of the forms and all the information. And so at the moment, we're kind of familiarize ourselves with the paperwork side of it, even though we didn't actually go through the submittal process. But I do agree with you. That would have been a very valuable exercise. But I think the main reason is that we didn't want to kind of waste everybody's time with something that we knew wouldn't be approved.
Okay. All right. Understood. And last question regarding the sludge analysis. Is that being done by our own analytical lab, or are we sending those samples out?
The samples are being sent out. So we have a lab that the water quality group already uses that had the ability to test those samples. So we just utilized an already existing resource.
Okay. But hold on. So we don't have our own SOP for sludge analysis in our own laboratory. We have to send those out?
Yeah, we had asked our lab and they didn't have that for that particular type of analysis, for a solid analysis for those heavy metals.
Heavy metals in sludge sample?
They probably don't do it often enough, and setting up for it and getting certified for it takes a lot.
We do have atomic absorption machines in our lab. Okay.
Yeah.
Back to you, Chair. Thank you. Thank you for the presentation.
President Martin. Thank you, Chair Cooper. Thank you, Rebecca, for the presentation. As we've said many times, we certainly appreciate the emphasis the agency puts on safety. It's very important. My question is fairly general. At least I'll speak for myself. I don't track quarter to quarter what we're adding or if it's expanding. Have you found in your time here, you've been here for a while now, is our safety program, does it naturally expand and add items, meetings, issues as we go, or is just trying to understand how it is we determine the full scope of our safety program? And is it involved?
I would say that since I got here just this year and being in charge of the safety program, I not only was looking at what we were currently doing, but I also was looking at some of the best practices that have been coming up during different trainings and articles. So what I see is us expanding our program and expanding our training and delving into all manner of health and safety for staff. I can't say whether or not that's a usual thing to be ever expanding, and if that's normal. I can just say that that's what I've been experiencing, because that's how I feel that the department should be run and what would be best for the employees. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. It's a fairly general question, as I said. So I do appreciate your work and the work of your team. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Very good. Rebecca, I'm amazed at the amount of training that you've done in the last quarter. The breadth of it's a huge amount, and that is really appreciated. I think it shows in our safety numbers. We have a very good safety record. Getting back to the sludge samples and the heavy metal, what were the preliminary results you got? Did we find any excess heavy metals in them?
So, and that's where the secondary results are coming in. So basically what we did was when we started testing, sent in the samples, we did the preliminary total threshold limit concentrations. Mm-hmm. And all of those below for that test. However, some of the samples, that preliminary result exceeded an action level to then do a secondary test called a soluble threshold limit concentration test. And so now we need to do that secondary test. And that would be the big one is that it was arsenic. And so once we get those results back, it's a separate test with a separate standard and see whether or not it exceeds that or if it doesn't meet that. If it doesn't exceed it, then it's non-hazardous and it can go to a landfill that is allowed to take non-hazardous special waste. If it does exceed it, then we'd have to find a place that will do that, is permitted to take hazardous waste disposal. But that's kind of where we're at right now is the preliminaries. And then that secondary is just for that those constituents that met that next trigger level.
Thank you. Yes, arsenic is about the most common that you find in sludge. And it's just our process knocks all the arsenic out completely. Good. Well, hopefully we don't have to haul it off to Utah and someplace.
That's what we're hoping to. But the one thing we can, you know, see the positive end of this is that that material, that media is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing, which is removing the arsenic from the water so that it doesn't get into the distribution line. So it's working because it's there.
Thank you for your report. It was very good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. Item four, Mr. Dickens is going to recommend adopting a resolution making the required findings and authorizing and approving the general manager to execute the energy services batteries.
Thank you, Chair Cooper, and members of the committee. I'm calling from Chicago here tonight. I was attending the first inaugural Alliance for Water Efficiency Water Symposium, where our agency provided two talks on water efficiency leadership to the national audience. So, and learned quite a bit. But I had to stay an extra day here so that I could present tonight. Otherwise, I'd be on an airplane right now. So. So let me see. Do I need to share my screen? My internet may not be that great, so I'm going to try to keep the bandwidth down. So let's see if this
Matt,
works.
I can have it for you as well if you're you're sharing your
video. Okay. On the slideshow. Okay. Well, again, I'm Matt Dickens, Sustainability Manager. And I am joined tonight with David Burdick from Terra Verde Energy, who is our consultant for numerous energy and energy efficiency related projects. So what I'm looking at tonight to present on is the SAV Water Self-Generation Incentive Program battery project. Tonight's objectives, of course, include recommending for the SAV Water Board of Directors to consider adopting a resolution, making the required findings and authorizing and approving the general manager to execute the energy services agreement with Pacifico Power, LLC, as well as the services order with STEM US Operations, Inc. for battery construction and operations and maintenance support at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant. In addition to that, our objectives are to provide an overview of the SGIP project, which is the Self-Generation Incentive Program, and then review financial impact, and then identify next steps. So quickly turning back to information that I've shared previously with the board and the committee, but just kind of as a refresher, the Self-Generation Incentive Program was put into action by the California Public Utilities Commission, which provided a considerable amount of money for agencies and entities and organizations to develop self-generation incentives or battery support. That's about $113 million. There's base level incentives. There were resiliency adders, meaning that if the system could operate or maintain operations and continuity of operations, if there was an outage, and there was an equity adder. Unfortunately, none of our sites qualified for the equity adder because they were not in disadvantaged communities. So SCB Water contracted with Terra Verde Energy to look at energy resilience and battery storage objectives, to conduct analysis, identify cost-effective projects to reduce demand, those that reduce demand, achieve resiliency, and maximize incentive funding. In addition to that, the energy resiliency and battery storage feasibility analysis we conducted had a cost benefit analysis and included electric meter data, demand profiles for our sites, photovoltaic potential, development of new photovoltaics, as well as optimal battery sizing, meaning is there a place that we could put a battery footprint, developable battery footprint. So again, our assessment process had looked at all of the sites of SCV Water, all 200 about appurtenance and facilities that we have. Our phase one groups, we identified 8 sites. Phase two, we identified 12 sites. The phase one was done through a very comprehensive cost effectiveness analysis, as well as the site availability, resiliency, and resource intensity. Phase two looked at additional sites that may need or kind of added additional criteria benefit or in the analysis of sites that added additional resiliency benefit that might be critical to operations that could be, you know, very much benefit from having batteries. Anyway, at the end of the day, we identified 2 projects that really met the best criteria across the spectrum here, and to develop solar at Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant and battery at Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant, and then also battery to be developed at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant. So the project that we're going to talk about tonight, though, is the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant, and that is because, and I'll share more on this later, the Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant project, the solar and battery, was deemed to be not technical nor cost effective through our RFP process. However, the battery here at Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant does. So we're looking at battery storage of about 2,000 kilowatt hours. This has a solar offset of 42% existing. The annual battery demand would be about 4,338 kilowatts or 4.3 megawatts, which is pretty good. Battery backup has 24 hours at 4%. So, you know, if we had a public safety power shutoff or other type of outage, I think the facility would be able to turn quickly to that battery and for up to about 4 hours of, you know, maximum peak demand. So longer if the demands kind of dim a little bit. And then our savings term, we looked at 15 years, which is the life of the asset. It should be noted that, I don't know if you can see my cursor. Originally, we thought the project we built here in this footprint area, this not developed or undeveloped area near the treatment vessels here. But we have since, based off of engineering recommendation, are looking at this large concrete pad that's right in front of the powerhouse. So that's kind of what we're looking at here today, right there. So turning back to the SGIP project overview, in June 2022, the board of directors authorized the agency to enter into a contract with Terra Verde to process, to do a couple of three different things. One, submit applications for SGIP projects to reserve our funding, to negotiate or to conduct an RFP for negotiation of the construction of the battery and the operations of the battery, and then to have construction support. So in September, October, in June 2022, we did submit those applications and we did get reservation of our funding through the gas company. September, October 2022, we went to RFP. I call that our request for proposals version 1 for the Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant project and the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant. The RFP received no responses due to the technical challenges with the ESFP project. So we were kind of scanning the environment. The environment was a little bit different back in that era. There were quite a few firms that showed up, did site visits, and just simply determined that the Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant was not a viable project, specifically for the solar development. And without solar, the battery kind of has at the facility is not quite as cost effective either. So we removed the Earl Schmidt filtration project from the RFP, and we went to RFP kind of version 2.0, where it was looking at the battery development at Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant only. We did receive four proposals. The best option, a preferred provider, was Pacifico Power and Stem, as noted in the recommendation. And then in May 2023, we did a preferred provider letter of intent to Pacifico Power. We're currently working with, in July 2023, we got our deposit back from the Earl Schmidt. We had to put 5% of the project, or 5% of the SGIP total value. We had to put 5% down in order to reserve our funding, about $22,000. So we're going to get that back since we withdrew that project from consideration. And then in 2023, we finalized the project, we're finalizing the project and service contracts. It should be noted that this process can and was kind of administered in a slightly different than our typical procurement processes because of the government code 4217 process, which we were enabled to utilize in a energy efficiency project like this. So let's look at kind of some of the financial components here. The estimated project cost is about $2.6 million, as shown there at the top. We also put in some money that we think might need to be available for the project, about $100,000, and that is should we need to upgrade any of our electric panel or electric equipment to connect to the system. We have $75,000 for agency review, and then we have the Terra Verde energy fees, which, of course, we've already procured those and, secured that contract last year and are working with them on that process. So the agency costs are $2.95 million for this system. Then we look at our estimated incentives and benefits from the self-generation incentive program. We're going to get a refund of or an incentive of $1.03 million, and that is distributed over a five-year period. We are also under the new Inflation Reduction Act. We are eligible, public agencies are eligible for investment tax credits, which we will get for this project as well. So, and that's usually 30% of the EPC plus utility upgrades. So that's about another $643,000 that we return. Our total non-recurring incentives that we would receive from the project, about $1.67 million. Then we have the benefits of the battery in operation over the life of the system. And that's so after we do the non-recurring incentives and benefits, the subtotal cost of the agency would be $1.3 million roughly, out of, again, that $2.9 that I mentioned. So then we look at recurring benefits, and that is the utility of the energy in the battery, rate arbitrage, demand reduction programs and capabilities, other types of benefits of utilizing, maximizing, and optimizing the use of our solar power, which is estimated at this initial pro forma about $2.1 million over the life of the project. So we're looking at over 15 years, the useful life of the project, the pro forma would be about a net $800,000 that the agency would benefit from financially from this project. So the project schedule in August 2023, we're finalizing the contract terms. We're working very diligently with our with BBK and the Pacifico and STEM to finalize some red line components of the contract and the service agreement, which is another good thing that I should note in this project. I'm going to go back to the previous slide. The battery itself is about $2 million. But what we did here and what we were able to do is we were able to include in the $2.557 million the 15-year O&M support and operation support from STEM, which has two great benefits. One, that service is paid for and covered for 15 years. And two, we get to incorporate that into the investment tax credit. So really two great benefits incorporated in the design of this project. So in August, September, we'll get our deposit refund from Earl Schmidt, about $22,000. Fall 2023, we would estimate launching construction for a 12-month construction period. The vendor says about 8 months, but we think, you know, let's be realistic and put it at 12 to be conservative. In fall 2024, we would complete construction. Then we've got battery and EMS configuration. There would be required to have some configuration so that our system, you know, kind of toggles between grid power, PV power, battery power, backup generator power, and then, you know, prioritizes those and utilizes those and see if you can toggle between them to have optimal redundancy and reliability. And then in spring 2025, we think we have full launching of the system operationally. So again, our staff recommendation is that the SCV Water Board of Directors consider adopting the resolution as stated here. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions. And again, David Burdick from Terra Verde is on the line as well if there are technical questions that the committee may have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matt. Liz, are there any members of the public on the outside that are looking to speak to this?
None? Seeing none. On this current, no, I have some coming in.
Did you have a comment, Ms. Moltemeyer?
No, Grace.
Okay. Committee members.
It's about on your capital improvement project.
Mr. Dickens, a good presentation. Could we see the slide with the money breakdown?
Let me pull that back up.
Okay, thanks.
So can I know you see my screen, Director Overhofsky?
Yeah, I can see it. Okay, so I know we've secured, in this proposal, what we're going to secure is an OEM service package for the lifetime of this battery, so 15 years. What about damage? Is there like an insurance policy if the battery is damaged beyond repair? Is that something that we consider in this budget?
Matt, I can speak to that if you'd like.
David, I appreciate that.
Great. Good evening, everybody. David Berger from Terra Verde Energy. Excellent question. So this is a roll-up of a 15-year financial pro forma that was provided to staff to help support the evaluation of the project. The insurance costs and ongoing operating expenses associated with the project are included in that cash flow projection. Those figures, I'm assuming, are summarized, Matt, somewhere in these kind of high-level table elements, but in the actual pro forma that was the basis for this procurement for the battery projects, those insurance costs were accounted for.
Okay, understood. Back to you, Chair.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Cooper. Matt, I just, my only comment, looks like it's a worthy project to move forward on. We've talked about it before, I think, and I'm supporting it.
Thank you, President Martin.
Matt? The useful life pro forma, 820, that's like $50,000 a year.
That's correct, Director Cooper.
Is that what the savings are, is $50,000 a year?
That's a conservative estimate. We have, depending on rates, depending on the types of demand reduction events, depending on the agency's preference of optimally operating the battery, it could range anywhere from about $600,000 to over $1 million But this is a, this right here is a, an average estimate of what we think the useful life performer would be based off of kind of historical performance and the system's demand.
It's really not a significant amount of money when you look at what the investment is. Granted, we're getting some incentives in there, but $50,000 a year just doesn't seem like a lot of money in it.
Yeah, so the full value after is the $2.1 million is the recurring benefits. And it's just showing that, you know, the $1.2 million is what our investment is. And we're getting $2.1 million, which is a net, which is a positive gain of $820,000. That's just, but the real recurring benefits would be the $2.1 million over the life. Okay.
That makes a little more sense. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Move this on to the board.
Just a quick question from Keith. Keith, did you review this project thoroughly?
Yes. Operations has been involved in, with all of these, this whole effort, which has ended up here from the beginning. So.
And what about the utility upgrades? Are we confident that the 100K would cover that?
I think so. But based on what we know of where this is going and the facilities we have at that location.
Okay. All right, Chair.
Okay.
How do you want to proceed?
Yeah, I think this is going to be one that we're going to have to present to the board, not put on consent. I think it's...
Oh. Director Cooper, Chair Cooper, thank you for mentioning that. Because the 4217 process requires us to have a public hearing. So at the next board meeting, we would have to schedule a public hearing, which we've already sent notification out for. But could, you know, of course, withdraw that if the board or the committee had chosen a different path. But it needs to be a public hearing as part required by 4217.
I saw that in there. Thank you. Okay, we'll move it on to the board and do a public hearing.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 5, this is to recommend approval to replace approximately 711 feet of pipeline in the Burns Lane. Josh Jenkins.
That's me here.
Oh, there you go.
also go by JJ. Hello, everybody. I thought the last meeting we had, it would be better if I did it in person. See everybody. So thanks for having me.
We like that in-person stuff.
You like it? I'm just right up the hill or down the road. So this is a project that staff has identified that there's a section of pipeline that needs to be replaced. As we speak, the pipeline is isolated. It is out of service right now. The location of it is the east end of the valley between Poppy Meadow Street and Abelia Road. It's part of our Pine Tree Zone 1 service area. Go to the next slide. So currently that's installed is a spiral wrap steel pipeline installed in 1983. It is a loop that provides not only domestic service, but the required fire flow for the whole portion of Abelia. So I don't know if you're familiar with that area. All of Zone 1, the lower portion of Zone 1, this is a loop to help supply that fire flow. We've had numerous leaks in the pipe. And when you look at the slide here, January 22, May 22nd, and June 23rd. And when I say numerous leaks, what happens is we get a call. There's water coming out of the ground. We send a crew out there. We isolate it. We dig it up. Either we make whatever type of repair, drop a piece of pipe in, put a clamp on. We go to turn the water back on, and bang, it blows out somewhere else. And then we repeat that process 2 times, maybe 3 times. Until we get lucky and the water comes back. So this last time we tried 3 times, it kept blowing out. We went back the next day, we dug a big section out, removed a section of that pipe and dropped a brand new piece of pipe in, crossed our fingers, turned the water back on and bang, it blew out again. So as we speak, like I said, the pipeline is isolated. There's one customer off of it. He has no water, and we have a bypass set up for him to keep him in service. So what we have planned is to replace the old steel line with a 12-inch duct alarm pipe. And like I said, there's one water service that's going to be replaced with that. Next slide. And Liz, if you can really see how bad the pipe is. So these two are the pipes that were removed when we installed this section of ductile. And you can see there's no, typically spiral wrap steel has a tar coating on it. There's no tar coating. There's no lining on the inside of the pipe. It's raw steel and it's corroded. It's lived its lifespan and it's ready for a new pipeline to go in.
Is the whole loop in that same shape?
No. There's AC pipe, ductile iron up there. And for some reason, who knows why, in 1983, they decided to put bare steel in this section. Luckily, there's only one service off of it, so we're kind of lucky there. But next slide. So for CEQA, we're going to go with the exemption of 15282, and that's for new pipeline as set forth in section 21080.21 of the Public Resource Code. And that's considered statutory exempt as long as the pipe does not exceed 1 mile in length, which we do not exceed that. And so that's the exemption. And the next slide. And so for financial considerations, funds for this project are included in the pipeline improvement CIP PAYGO for 2324. And the budget for this job is $400,000. So staff recommends that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends to the Board of Directors that you can authorize Matt to direct staff to complete this project in the amount not to exceed $400,000.
Very good. Thank you, Josh.
Welcome.
Any questions outside?
None virtually, but we do have Ms. Meltmeyer.
Okay, on this item, you wish to speak, Ms. Holtmark?
Yes, I just want to make sure, because this is for a park. It's a Bridgeport Pocket Park.
No, this is the other end of the valley. This is put out in Pine Tree.
I don't care where it is. I want to make sure that it gets built.
No, well, this is a different project than what you're looking at.
Well, I'm on page 33. What project are you on right now?
We're on items 5, which is to replace 711 feet of pipe in the Pine Tree area.
Okay, that's no comment.
Okay.
I'm just done, so yeah. I want to make sure that it's actually going to take place.
Thank you, Ms. Lintmar. Questions from the committee? Vice President Rosahofsky.
JJ, so you mentioned that pipe was installed in 1983. Question, do we have any paperwork of any installations in that area from that year?
No, but we found a couple of beer cans buried on top of it. So that tells you.
Yeah. This would have been Newhall County area.
So the
Pine Tree was Newhall County area.
We do have a set of plans that shows, obviously when it was installed, it shows a profile on it, but for whatever reason, I don't know why. I don't know if there was no inspection when it was installed, which probably is the case, but bare steel.
Do you and your team foresee any other issues in that same area or any of the Newhall area that might have this kinds of installation?
I don't foresee it. I hope we don't find it, but sometimes you do find, where somebody went in 30 years ago and it was on a weekend and nobody was around, they put something in, I guess, the wrong type of pipe but we do find, and then 1983, if it's not wrapped, it's just lived its lifespan.
Okay.
But as far as the community in that area, I don't foresee anything.
Have we experienced the status of such pipes before?
Not that I can think of. You, Keith?
No, but I mean, we'll have instances of pipelines that are failing with materials like this, but I don't recall anything in recent times.
Thank you. Well, thank you for doing this work. And I know no more further comments from me, Chair.
President Martin.
Well, this is probably one of the most obviously needed projects that's come before the committee. So I'm happy that staff can do the work without going out to get a contractor. Glad we have capability. And obviously, I'm full support of this, and I think we can put it on consent.
This one's amazing to see spiral uncoated steel pipe in a water system anywhere. That's the first time I've seen it in our system.
Me personally, I think it was a temporary thing.
I got a feeling
it's a temporary thing, and somebody said, oh, well, you know, they forgot. Oh, it's in the ground. You know, it's moving water right now, and then they forgot about it. That's what I think. But
okay, consent calendar?
Oh,
absolutely. Very good. Thank you, BJ.
Thank you for joining us, by the way.
Thank you.
Thanks. Mr. Abercrombie, monthly operating and production report.
All right, the report's in the packet, item 6. This is, again, for the month of June. With regard to production, I would just say I reported last time that we were, due to the abundance of surface water this year, we are working to take as much of that as we can with our water resources group. And so during the month of June, we took about 79% of our total water as import water. And we're continuing that as high as we can. The graphs, I looked at the water level graphs, and we actually saw two wells for the month of June show an all-time high water level. So in certain areas, we're still seeing that. Other wells are, the levels are sort of flattening out, you know, which you would expect this time of year with no rain in recent months and still pumping well. But all in all, water levels are still very healthy.
Were the high ones Canyon Country?
One of them was Gassake area.
Oh.
And one was one of the Pine Tree wells. That's far
old. Pine Tree, that's unusual. That's good. Any questions from outside?
Any questions? Round 6.
Seeing none.
Okay, item 7, capital improvement projects.
Our seemingly ever-growing list of capital improvement projects that we are trying to close several projects out on, but also adding several more new ones in. That is on page 843 of your packet, and have no other report.
Questions from outside?
Seeing none.
I'm not sure if this was the one area you wanted to speak on, Ms. Multimer. I'm not in the capital improvement programs.
Specifically the Bridgeport Park, which is about halfway down on the first page.
Sorry, I don't know where you are, right? I'm just looking for that one. So no.
Yes, this is the item 3 on Bridgeport Pocket Park. On page 43, capital improvement. We put in here $373,147.60. So it's about the Bridgeport Pocket Park.
Right, that's the one I'm talking about, $373,147.60.
Yes, please go ahead.
That's the one. It is going to get built, right?
It's under construction now, yes.
It says it is.
It says
just following up.
It's 26% completed now.
Oh, good.
With an October completion date, and I do believe we're on pace.
Okay. Thank you. Committee.
need plans for like ceremonies for Bridgeport Park?
I would leave that to either Matt or Steve if they want to answer that. I am sure there would be one.
Steve, are there any, Mr. Cole, are there any planned ribbon cuttings for Bridgeport Park? PR events?
Hi, Director Oak and everybody else. Yes, we are coordinating a ribbon cutting event with the City of Santa Clarita. It'll be a joint event. We're targeting September 1 right now, so we'll see. The project's in its final stages of wrapping up, but we've got our outreach team working together with the project team, so you'll hear more about it here soon.
Good. That looks like Mono Lake behind you, Steve. Is it?
It is. Right behind this shiny head that's on the screen.
Oh, I thought that was it. That's right. Did you have any questions, President Martin?
No, I just appreciate staff keeping control of these projects. Our change order rates are still low. Progress is moving forward, so we appreciate all the work you guys do over there.
Yes, it's amazing how that list has expanded in the last year. It's grown quite large, so you've got a lot on your plate.
There are a lot of design going on right now, so you will see even more construction projects, I'm assuming, in several months.
Very good. Third-party funded agreements. Talk about a long list.
Yeah, so we have a pretty much equal amount of work going on the developer side for third-party funded agreements. We are also having to be very diligent in keeping on top of these to make sure we are having enough meters in place and following the timing of the development that comes in and generally meeting our obligation of providing the water to these developments, as we're not land use authority. We're just providing the resources that the land use authority has designated. We do our planning portion. So that's all I have for that section.
Questions outside of this?
Not any public comment, but I do see Mr. Alborn's hand raised. Mike, I'm going to go ahead and promote you.
Are you there, Mike?
Sorry, I didn't. It was an accident. I put the phone in my pocket. And I accidentally raised the hand, I guess. I don't have anything to add. Sorry.
Thank you, Mike.
Anything you'd like to talk to us about tonight, Mike? Is that, that's all right.
Thank you all. Hope you're all doing well.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Any questions on projects? And the committee planning calendar, Mr. Mayo.
Yeah, as we discussed during the CIP project report, there are a lot of upcoming projects that you will see, especially coming by about October is when we're going to start asking for quite a bit of the projects coming into construction and then through the end of the year. So a little bit of some projects in September and October, trying to keep us to the 4 to 5 projects per meeting so we don't overwhelm and go too long in a meeting. We will do our best to keep to that, but depending on how some of our upcoming preliminary engineering reports come out, we may have to bring more as those come through. Fortunately, with the increase in general manager authority to 150,000, hopefully we can hold that agenda. I think that's going to help it quite a bit.
Very good. Any questions, Dr.?
Seeing none.
Questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll move on to get item 10, Mr. Abercrombie, treatment distribution operations report.
Sure, just a few things to report this evening. Staff has been working on a transmission leak in one of our 39-inch pipelines. Not a huge leak, but one nonetheless that we've been able to isolate. No people. I mean, it's a transmission lane, but none of our turnouts are affected. We
staff work to get a company with a video camera service involved so that we could find where the leak was, as opposed to just digging up the street willy-nilly. Pinpointed the leak, dug it up, and are now in the process of determining the fix for it and so forth. So
the location on it is?
It's in Fairview?
Fairview. Grandview.
Fairview.
Right down the street. My house.
We also have completed the second phase of the AMI meter project. We had a first phase we did last year. This phase started, I think, in early July or mid-July. It took them a little over a month, I think, to do these 1,500 meters or so. And that's been completed. Staff is working currently on an RFP for the third phase. This will be an area in Castaic that will tackle. And that's probably coming to you and the board in the next couple of months.
That's third and final phases?
No, it won't be the final. This is going to go on a while. Yeah. The PFAS pilot project that you may recall we've been talking about a long time, that we look to create a pilot plant of sorts at one of our facilities. This happens to be at the end wells?
I think so.
And that project is up and running now. We have currently, it's constructed, and we're running one resin currently. There'll be a little five that we'll test, but that right now one's up and running. So, and that'll be a long lead time project. And we hired our senior recycled water coordinator finally. That was a long process, but that person is on board and coming up to speed. He started Monday. We're continuing to work with the Division of Drinking Water to consolidate our operating permits. As you know, we have 7 operating permits from all the previous entities. And so we've been... Mike started this process on January 2nd of 2018, the day after we combined. But the DEW wasn't much interested in talking about it then, because it's a big project. But they finally, he wore them down, I think. And so they've been working with us and are moving towards that consolidation. It's not a quick process. We estimate probably another year, because essentially staff has to rewrite every plan and program that we have with DDW as far as how do we sample for this, where do we test for that, how often, and all those plans have to be put together and reviewed and approved by DDW. But that pathway has been laid out and everybody seems to be on board, so it does look like we're moving in that direction. And then I guess the last thing I would just wanted to kind of tee up is, we continually look at our staffing needs and our organizational sort of structure. And TDOMS is a large group, a lot of moving parts. Since we were formed, we've moved things around a lot. And it's in a pretty good place, but there's still some tweaks that Mike and I have been working on that we think might serve us better in the future. And a lot of this ties also into just the long-term plans with regard to retirements, retention of staff, et cetera. And so look for more. It's really nothing to lay out, talk about in detail tonight, but there'll be more that we bring forward on that at a future date. And that's all I have.
Pretty good. Thank you, Don.
Seeing no public comment.
Committee members, questions?
It's going from 1, from 7 to 1. So thank you and Mike for doing that. We're going to PFAS resin pilot project on the end house. So you're going to go from 1 resin at a time, and you're looking for a break, right?
Right. And they won't be doing one at a time. I mean, they're setting the system up to be able to simultaneously test multiple. They just haven't gotten that far yet. So, and they'll run these systems as pilot tests with a particular resin for months. And they'll be testing, you know, how fast everything breaks through, because certain, you know, there's a myriad of a soup of things that we may be looking at. And ultimately, the end game will allow us to understand what's most cost effective. Something may break through a little faster, but it may be a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
So, or vice versa. So that's the ultimate goal. And part of it also is to help with getting new things there, because there's a lot of new stuff coming out of the market. PFAS is big, it's in the news, it's nationwide, everybody's jumping on board. There's a lot of new stuff coming in the market, but the Division of Drinking Water only approves certain things for use. And there's a long process they require to sort of validate that a new material is acceptable. And this will sort of kickstart that and get us into a position of getting some of these things approved in a much shorter time frame than we would have otherwise.
Understood. So last time you presented this, I believe we have 4 or 5 different manufacturers and types. If you see more, you'll add them to the list.
Yeah, we'll look at doing that, sure.
And then as far as validations with drinking water, it's a partnership between us and the manufacturer to get that validation, or do we have to validate it, prove it to the authorities before use? How does that work?
I mean, it's a good question. On one level, you could say, well, it's their responsibility to make it happen. But they can't really do it on their own. They really have to almost work with a water agency and the Division of Drinking Water. And, you know, we've gotten these entities that we have involved, they have some skin in the game, because we're making them pay for some of the testing and things like that. So this is a process where we can work together and kind of move the ball a little closer to where we all want it to be.
No, absolutely. In the maritime sector, a lot of manufacturers of balanced water treatment systems will partner up with companies to test the system in the real world. And in return for Coast Guard approval, you would have a significant discount for that particular party. So are we leveraging that too? Like if we validate their resin with the authorities, we'll be able to secure cheaper rates to that?
Well, we haven't gotten into that yet. That hasn't seemed to be anything on the
Back to you, Chair.
That's a good thought, though. You know, I've over the years seen us Metropolitan or do a lot of pilot testing, and I don't know that we ever got a break from a manufacturer on this stuff. President Martin, anything?
I think
very good. Thank you, Keith. And Mr. Mayo, General Report on Engineering Services.
We have one. Rather than going to our report, we're going to use that time today to give an update on the water master plan. We have with us Tori Yokoyama with Hazen and Sawyer, and he's going to lead us in the update.
Great. Thank you, Courtney. All right. So I'm here to give an update on the water master plan. Next slide, please. So just to recap, the major scope elements of the water master plan include data collection, field condition assessments, hydraulic model analysis, system evaluation, CIP development, and the master plan report. Next slide. So if you recall, I was here in January of this year giving an update on some of the early tasks that we did as part of the master plan. So some of those early tasks that I reported on at the time was data collection, and the field condition assessment that took place in December of last year. That was where a team of our engineers from our team went out to some of your most critical facilities and assessed the condition and operation of them. Next slide. I also spoke about the hydraulic model development. That was a big aspect of this project, where we're bringing together the individual hydraulic models of the legacy systems into one cohesive hydraulic model. So that was a big part of the effort that we were doing early on in the projects and continue to move forward in analysis and project development now. Next slide. So I'm here to give you guys an update on the major work elements that were conducted in Q1 and Q2 of this year. So the items that I'm going to be speaking on are hydraulic model fieldwork and calibration, hydraulic model analysis, water quality analysis, pipeline risk assessment, condition assessment recommendations, and Saugus well siting. Next slide. So the first topic is hydraulic model fieldwork and calibration. A hydraulic model requires calibration to ensure the simulated results match real-world conditions. Next slide. So to calibrate the model, we conducted and collected the following data: hydraulic grade line or HGL tests along two of your major transmission mains, fire flow tests throughout the system, and we did that at 32 locations, and SCADA data. Here's some pictures of our team and SCB operations team out in the field during the model field data collection for the model calibration process. Next slide. I also have a couple more pictures. So specifically the picture on the left, the woman standing up, Meg Roberts, is our hydraulic modeling lead, and the woman kneeling is installing a pressure logger on your hydrant. So this is along your transmission main where we're making sure that we're reading the pressure accurately in your transmission main. And we have the laptop hooked up to it, just making sure we're getting accurate data. The picture on the right is our team member Meg that's down in the valve vault installing a potometer flow meter. And then, of course, your staff providing assistance and support. This is where we're installing a flow meter so we can validate the flow that's coming through your transmission main. Next slide. Here's a map of what one of the HGL tests that we did. So kind of all the red dots are locations where we installed pressure loggers, and those were those installations at the hydrant where we're monitoring the pressure at each of those locations. And the black dot in the middle is that picture where we're installing the flow meter down the valve vault in the bike path parallel to the river, measuring the flow. So we start at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant, and we record pressure at all these different locations that are shown in red and measure flow at the flow meter location. Next slide. And then we work with your operations staff. We ask them, once everything's up and running, installed correctly, we say, send as much flow from the treatment plant as you can. So they bumped it up to 20 MGD on that day and kept it going continuously for the period that we were able to record on. And you know, we were able to, if you go to the next slide, so we take that data that we collect in the field, and then we compare it to our hydraulic model. If there's adjustments that need to be made, we make adjustments. But we're happy to report that our hydraulic model predicted the HGL within 4 feet or 1.7 PSI of the field measurements. And the model also predicted the flow within 2% of the potometer measurement. So these are good, really good results of the HGL tests on the transmission main. Just understanding how your distribution system is laid out, we want to make sure that the accuracy of our model starts at the transmission main. That's the start of your distribution system. If you don't have accuracy in your transmission main, then those inaccuracies are going to just propagate out throughout your system. So we start at the transmission main and we make sure that we're modeling that aspect of your system accurately. Next slide. But then we also go to the far extents of your distribution system, and we're doing individual tests at several hydrants. So this is, you know, the transmission main is the start of the hydrants, are the far end or kind of equivalent to where your meters are. And we did 32 tests throughout your system. The way we conduct these tests is we at each one of these locations, we install a pressure logger at each fire hydrant, and we first just measure the static pressure in the system. Then we flow the hydrant. We go to an adjacent hydrant, open it up, and flow it at 1,000 to 2,000 GPM and record the residual pressure. So the amount of the pressure in this system when you're flowing that hydrant at 1,000 to 2,000 GPM. And we also record the pressure drop. Next slide. So what we want to see is we want our hydraulic model to simulate those conditions that we saw in the field. So we go back, we record all those results at those 32 locations, and we go back to the model. We see how closely our model matches the field work that we were conducting. So at our 32 locations, we're looking at static pressure, we're looking at residual pressure, and we're looking at pressure drop. And we were able to calibrate at 30 of those locations. Sometimes, you know, there's just little things that are happening out in the field that no matter how much we're tweaking the model, we just can't match. Sometimes that's a closed valve. Sometimes it's just a little operational thing happening in your system. Pretty normal to not have 100% on all those points, but on 30 of those 32 points, we're able to be within the calibration goal. So that's your fire flow tests are within calibration. Your transmission main is within calibration. So we complete this process, and now we have a calibrated hydraulic model that we can trust accurately matches your system's real world conditions, and we can use that for analysis and CIP development. Next slide. So once we have the hydraulic model, we now have a tool that we can use for analysis. So some of the things that we use and are using the model for right now are looking at your low pressure areas, high pressure areas, checking that you have adequate fire flow availability throughout your system, pipeline velocity and head loss, looking at where you guys might have bottlenecks or locations where we need to install looping, parallel piping, increase pipe diameters, looking at interconnections between your legacy systems, water age, and using the models to support future development needs. Next slide. Another aspect of a major work element that we conducted over the last 6 months is the water quality analysis. So this is where we looked at evaluating your water system for potential conflicts with current and future water quality regulations. Just to summarize the steps right there, I mean, we, of all your different groundwater wells, we accumulated all the data, all the water quality data from all your wells going back to 2015. We compiled that data into a database, and we used a Power BI dashboard to present that data and evaluate it with your staff and make sure that we concur with the treatment plant project or the treatment projects on your wells that you have coming up and identify any future potential treatment plant projects. So next slide. Here's just a picture of a Power BI dashboard that we developed to present the water quality data. So this is a dashboard that allows us to overlay a lot of different things regarding your water quality data. So we can look at water quality for a particular well. We can overlay as many wells or as few wells as we want. We can kind of change the reporting period to look at specific years. And we're charting all the different analytes that we have data for and in comparison to the MCLs and just seeing how that data has come in over the last 7 or 8 years, which is what we have the data for. Next slide. So Power BI, what is Power BI? If you're not familiar with this, it's BI stands for business intelligence. It's a software that allows a user to turn unrelated data sets into meaningful, analytical, interactive visualizations. Power BI is a Microsoft product, so anybody that has Microsoft Office Suite has access to Power BI. It's a tool that we've been using in our industry the last 5 years or so. It really allows us to easily visualize data, large amounts of data, and it essentially can do all the same things that you can do in Excel, but it allows the user to manipulate, change kind of parameters, max mins, durations a lot quicker and easier. So it's a very valuable tool to present information kind of in the form of a master plan and water quality data. We're using it for a couple different other aspects in this master plan and for the user or the client to be able to see the data rather than trying to, you know, weed through a bunch of Excel database data or Excel graphs. It's just kind of it's an easier kind of visualization tool. So the way it works is it can be an Excel file. It can start with SCADA data, GIS data, or any kind of database. There's an engine where the user sets up the different visualization that you're looking to do and then just graphs it. So we use this for water quality, and we're using Power BI for a couple different applications in the master plan. Next slide. There's a lot of different applications, asset management, program project management. We use it internally as part of our business management to monitor our projects. You can use it to monitor AMI meter data, water treatment plant operations, rate modeling, financial analysis, CIP and master plans. The data that feeds it can come from anything that can be funneled into a database format. So hydraulic model, CMMS and SCADA, GIS, maintenance records, planning or finance data, project management software, customer service reports, all that can be used to kind of set up your own unique dashboard based on whatever you want to do. Next slide. Another task that we did is the pipeline risk assessment. This is consequence and probability of failure analysis of pipelines to ultimately recommend a pipeline replacement program. So similar to the project that JJ presented, we're applying a criteria that looks at all of your pipelines in your system and finding the pipelines that are the most vulnerable, finding the pipelines that should be prioritized for replacement, and setting up a systematic program so you guys are going through your system and replacing some of the oldest, most vulnerable pipelines over the next 20 years in your CIP. Next slide. Part of the work is we set up a scoring criteria. So we're scoring, and this is a criteria that we developed in collaboration with your staff, looking at criteria such as remaining useful life, material. You have certain materials and diameters that have had a higher break history than others, looking at leak break history, looking at diameter, corrosivity of soil. So this is the kind of scoring criteria that we would apply to your pipelines and then identify the potential pipelines that should be included in a pipeline replacement program. Next slide. Condition assessment recommendations. So last time I was here, I spoke about the getting out in the field and actually doing the condition assessment. Now we've been kind of moving through this step process and working on the steps in the red box where we're developing the replacement cost for the equipment that is in poor or fair condition and needs to be replaced, and developing the project recommendations that will ultimately feed into your CIP. Next slide. Here's an example of just some of the condition assessment recommendations. So our team of engineers is went out to your site and is looking at all the equipment that we can physically see at a site. So that includes the pumps and the motors, the valves, the piping, all the electrical equipment, structural and civil components, and identifying the equipment that should be replaced, identifying the equipment that doesn't need to be replaced, and it's in fine condition and it's going to last you another 20, 25 years. Next slide. Here's another example of where we're using Power BI. So we took the condition assessment, we came up with our recommendations, we developed a Power BI dashboard to be able to kind of present the recommendations to your staff so they can easily see what we're recommending you do at each one of your facilities. So this dashboard we set up to describe, here's what the project is, bottom left, here's all the itemized list of the equipment and the condition we found them in, and then the associated replacement cost for each one of the pieces of equipment. And then the table on the right breaks down the total project cost for you, all the project costs combined to be replaced, plus all the additional costs that comes along with delivering a total project. Contingency tax, general conditions, design, and then total cost. Next slide. Another task is Saugus well siting. So your agency is looking to drill 4 new wells in the Saugus formation. We have a subconsultant, Thomas Harder and Company, who's our hydrogeologist, who's working your staff to identify 4 optimal locations for those new Saugus wells 5, 6, 7, and 8. So this is where we're going. It's kind of a similar process to the scoring criteria, but this time we're looking at well sites, finding the sites that are available, finding the sites of land where you guys own the land or land that can be acquired, and it's within a good well-producing location within the Saugus Formation where you can site these 4 future wells. Next slide. So that's a summary of kind of the major scope elements that have been done over the last 6 months or so, kind of where are we now. CIP development, that's something that we're currently working on and we're going to continue to work through into the Q3, Q4 of this year. And then we're going to get to substantial completion on the CIP recommendations. Once that's a substantial completion, we're going to move forward and document all the analyses, all the recommendations and findings in the final master plan report, which will start at the end of this year and move into the early part of 2024. And that is a summary of where things are at on the water master plan.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. second to last slide. So here's the overall project schedule, kind of seeing where we've been, where we are at today with the orange diamond. You can see we're kind of right in the middle of CIP development in August of this month. That's going to continue on for the next couple months. And then we're going to be moving into the master plan report. So kind of where we've been, where we're at today, and where we're headed. And I think that.
Thank you, Tori. Any questions out there, Liz?
Seeing none.
Very good. Vice President Orzowski.
Looking forward to the master plan report. Now, regarding the dashboards, will our staff have access to that dashboard after delivery of the master plan?
Yeah, and we've already started delivering the versions of the Power BI so you guys can bring it into your system and kind of see how it's, how you're able to view it, you know, and kind of in the process of training your staff on how to use it, how to update it, how to adjust it for your future needs.
And what about the data warehouse where the data is being stored? Is that also going to be provided to us?
Yeah, we're turning over all of our data to you guys, hydraulic model, GIS, everything that we develop as part of this master plan is your data.
And Mr. Crombie, in terms of slide 19 and the pipeline risk assessment and slide 20, page 76, 75 in a packet. So that kind of matched what we already do here at SMB Water when we determine which pipelines are going to be need to be fixed first? Or is that something new?
Well, I would say we use a lot of this right now, in particular, like with the PVC piping.
Right.
We knew there were failure in certain types of materials, certain sizes of materials. We also tried to help evaluate, you know, is it more critical to do this piece of 40-inch PVC because it's right in front of the hospital, for instance, versus is it, you know, can it be that do we do this piece over here that's in the middle of just a park? And so this I would say is much more sophisticated and a much more tight process that, you know, allows you to look at a lot more variables and a bigger picture than you've been able to do just with the sort of in-house way that we've done it to date.
Okay.
And just to expand on that a little bit, you know, we met with Hazen and Sawyer and Tori and his group to go over our methodology. So this is really just an expansion of what we've already been doing, working with operations, getting the information from operations, the leak history, the data, the history of the system really comes from our operations team. And then you combine that with the engineering side and looking at what we need. I think one of the things that we really were able to expand on here is also the interconnectivity and using our legacy systems and how do we intertie them and combining that with an updated calibrated model to show that we can now circulate these tanks, which is something that's hard to do just by looking at it or dealing with the system. You really need that more advanced computer model to help you integrate that. And so this takes what we've been doing and takes it to a different level.
Okay. And who's on your staff? On both of your departments is right now being trained on how to visualize these dashboards, how to manipulate them, how to work with them.
So we have a number of people, myself included, that have access to the Power BI. I know Jason does, and I do believe Mark, one of our newer engineers, has been working with it, and then Shadi. So we're using some of our senior engineers in there as well. From the engineering side to go over these Power BI. We've presented them to operations. I know Mike Alvord has been part of it and others, but I don't know how much they have been manipulating it yet until we actually have the data. We're at that beginning stage where we have preliminary information. We're seeing how easy it is to manipulate.
Right.
One of the reasons we selected Hazen to do this study is they were never going to give us a black box. They always were going to give us this ability for us to manipulate a dashboard and to look at the system and to allow the master plan to grow over time. I didn't want just a document that sat on the shelf. And so that's what Power BI allows us to do without the additional cost of any additional software. We already have this.
Yeah.
We already have this system. So it's ready made. It's just the training and the ability to use it is what we are working on now.
Okay, understood. And you know, when you hand over this project, how much time do you have for additional training for staff?
We're actually doing a training as we speak. So there's a lot of different kind of digital tools that we're currently training your staff on. So the hydraulic model, we've been doing training. We're we're training one of your newer staff members, Matthew Gutierrez, on the hydraulic model. There's another software info asset planner that kind of relates to the pipeline program. We're training Marin on that program. So we were actually kind of doing the training now. Felt like it'd be more useful to kind of train your staff while we're talking every week on these projects, so we can just continually be working rather than kind of at the end of the project when, you know, just seems like it made for a better transition to hand this over to your staff. Be training them now. You guys could start working in it and we could just be working together on it as we kind of move the project forward.
I gotta say, this is great. I share your sentiment too. I think of a static document in the paper in the form is now a thing of the past, and utilizing Power BI, which is really available to anyone that has a Microsoft suite, is an excellent tool. We use it in the private sector a lot. One problem that we do have with some of our staff is it's relatively new. And there is a lack of training because it's assumed that it's intuitive. But if you have a lot of things to do during the day, you know, you just might not be using it. So definitely appreciate training of the staff and having kind of a fluid document delivery to SB Water. Right, thank you. Now back to you, Chairman.
Thank you. President Martin.
Yeah.
Thank you for your report. You've done a lot of the work. Back on page 69, where we have the fire flow test calibration summary, you have a couple in the right column that indicate it's not calibrated.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it appears that the losses are greater than what your model would suggest, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what would you do in this case? I mean, do you think something's going on inside the system that...
When we've seen these kind of results before, usually it's a closed valve in the system that you're not aware of. Because when you're looking at static pressure, you're not really stressing the system. You're just putting a log on the hydrant and just recording what the pressure in the system is kind of just during normal demands. When you're actually flowing 1,000 to 2,000 GPM through that pipeline, then it's forcing all that water to take the most efficient path to get it out of that hydrant. So when you open up that hydrant, if you have a closed, so the model assumes everything, you know, is open unless kind of we know where the closed valves are. If you have a closed valve here, then it's forcing all that water to come one way, which is increasing the head losses, which is going to drop the pressure in the system a lot more than if it were to come from both the loop system. So one of the things that we would do is like, hey, our model is not matching at this particular point. Here's a kind of an area where we should check to make sure all the valves are open and make sure. So that's kind of, and a lot of times that's been the culprit, just a closed valve that maybe was closed for some, you know, to do a pipe repair, just do something, and then it was never opened up. So that's the kind of thing that we've seen most often when the field results are a lot lower. The pressure is a lot lower than what we're seeing in the model.
Occasionally, what you can get is a pipe got replaced and didn't show up into the model, and so the model may show or also a choke point that doesn't exist. And so, or if you're seeing the reverse, you know,
yeah.
Or you may have a pipe that got listed in the model larger than it actually is in the field, and so you can have a controlled choke that way. So at least this gives you a footprint, and usually a pretty tight footprint of where to start to look. And then we'll go through that investigative process and then eventually make this part calibrated as well.
So there's still some follow-up work still to do on.
Yeah, I mean, the model is system-wide can be considered calibrated, but, you know, we're constantly tweaking the model, you know, we're talking with your staff almost every day. And just finding little things, we got to adjust that, we got to change that. So it's an ongoing process where, I mean, we've turned over the model so your staff can start using it and learning it, but it won't be done until, you know, the project's done.
But I do believe we have started to use it for fire flow because we're pretty confident in the majority of the model.
Yeah, that would be really good.
So small areas like this are usually not a major concern when you're running the system as a whole.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, you know, you're working hand in glove with the staff on this, and
that everything is in alignment with the scope of the report, and we're not doing anything that we won't be able to use once you finish up and walk away. Sounds all good. Thanks for your report.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and they're not going anywhere. They're still on our on-call, and they're still going to be utilized. So when we need additional support, they have a number of projects that they're doing with us on other aspects. So Hazen has been a very good partner in this.
Yeah, I wish you'd have been around 25 years ago with this. I really could have put it to good use.
Yeah.
When you said you went out and inspected equipment, and did you inspect all equipment out in the field or all pump stations, all of that?
So we had a team of four people out in the field for a period of 3 weeks. Each facility takes anywhere from an hour to 2 hours to inspect. So I forget the number, but it's about 25% of the facilities. And that wasn't just a random decision on where we went. Okay. We kind of went through an exercise of prioritizing the facilities with your staff. So kind of similar to the criteria that you saw with the pipelines, we kind of used a similar scoring methodology for your facilities. So kind of came up with an initial list and then presented it to your team. And then they said, you know, not so much that, more this, and kind of eventually came up with a list of here are the most kind of critical, highest priority projects we'd like you guys to inspect. And those are the facilities we went out and inspected.
Now, within the treatment plant, did you do the same kind of thing in the treatment plant, or is that planned in the future?
So we went to the treatment plant, but there was areas within the treatment plant that your staff wanted us to focus on. So I think it was the intake pumps. Like, we didn't need to look at all the process. We didn't need to look at the big clear well, but it was like, say, the intake pump stations. And that was like a key critical aspect of the process they wanted our team to look at. So that's kind of how we came to what we looked at the treatment plant, but we were on both treatment plants. And kind of,
so you didn't get into chemical feed systems and all the
chemicals. Can't remember if we looked at the specific chemical feed systems but I mean, it was for that reason. It was your staff saying, like, I think these are the most critical locations, but, you know, like Courtney said, we're not going anywhere. If things come up and if there's a need, you know, or a desire for us to go out and spend a few extra days looking at specific parts of your treatment plant or facilities, we're happy to do that.
Yeah, I see this being able to be used in a lot, electrical systems, treatment plant, distribution system, everywhere that this could be a good database put together, and you can get an idea of what the maintenance is going to be for the next few years.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's terrific. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we'll be looking at expanding that more with our asset management program, go into a deeper dive. But for this program, we needed to define what projects we are likely to be able to do in the next period of time. So there's no need for him to examine the entire system as part of this master plan in that minutia, visiting each site, because we know where we need to focus and we know what we can accomplish. We focused it to a certain area to stay in budget as well.
But it sure fits in your asset management plan.
It does.
Yeah. Very good.
It's a great introduction for us.
When you say asset management, would that also include all of our electrical infrastructure as well?
Yes.
It's a big job.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you, Doris. And with that,
that's all I have.
Nothing else in your report?
Nope.
I guess then we'll adjourn. Thank you very much. Good night. Thank you, JJ, for coming.